You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Joining us on the program today is Verity Faith, Executive Director of Social Justice at UTS, former New South Wales Government Minister for Education, whose focus was always on equity in education and how to best address educational disadvantage in low socioeconomic, rural and remote Indigenous communities. This evening at 5 p.m, Verity will be facilitating a panel at UTS to discuss what is still a delicate issue, gender quotas. Verity, first of all, welcome to the program.
Hello.
We're going to start with a big question and see if you can answer the overarching theme of the night. Is quota in this context, a gender quota, really a dirty word?
I don't believe it's a dirty word, because I think for many industries, particularly the industries that have the most power, so when we're talking about politics and business and the senior echelons of government, quotas and targets, but particularly quotas, are often what is needed. Without really tough action where you actually mandate that women are included in the workforce, change just never happens.
I read a pretty shocking little blurb on the page of the event that says that Australia is still 80 years away from female CEOs reaching equal representation with their male counterparts, which is predicted to occur by 2100 based on current growth patterns. This means that if anyone has children under the age of 10, they can expect that their grandchildren will enter a workforce with equal men and women represented in most senior leadership positions. How do you feel about this? Because when I read it, I didn't feel great.
Well, it just shows how far we've still got to go. When you think about it, when women have been participating in the workforce for as long as they have, and for us to still be so far away from equal representation, particularly at the senior levels of business and government, it's just immensely frustrating. So not only is it still 80 years away, right? So in 80 years' time, hopefully, based on current growth patterns, we'll have equal representation with male counterparts at senior level. But look at it, if you look at cultural and ethnic diversity, it's even worse. At the moment, amongst the business and political elite in Australia, only 5% of leaders come from non-European backgrounds, despite the fact that in the Australian population, 25% come from those backgrounds. You look at media, it's again overwhelmingly dominated by men, and often it's white Anglo-Saxon men. So in recent analysis undertaken by Jenna Price at UTS, it was shown that men dominate as quoted sources, and 70% of opinion columns on politics are penned by men. That's 70%. We have a long way to go, and that's one of the reasons why we're getting a really good, diverse panel of speakers here today from across the political spectrum, but also representing government and business and so forth.
80 years is a long way away. I'd have to reach sort of 102 to be able to see an equitable and equal workplace. Why is gender balance so important? What does it bring to our community, a society?
Well, there's so much research that shows diversity is good for decision making. That having a really, say, a board or a cabinet that is filled with just people who've had exactly the same experiences in life and with the same outlook is not actually good for good decision making. The best decision making is made when people challenge each other, when people are actually forced to. There's even research that shows that you have greater cognitive growth, that your brain actually expands as a young student if you are faced with diverse classrooms, right? It's actually good for the individual, but it's good for society because you have a whole lot of different views entering into the decision-making process. And for something like Parliament, which is actually based on democracy and representation of people, the more diverse our society becomes, of course our Parliament needs to be more diverse. It needs to actually represent the people, not just a very small minority of the people.
And we'll get to the Australian Parliament in just a second, but talking about the public, What do you know that Australians feel about gender quotas at the moment?
I think people always worry that gender quotas somehow mean that it's not merit. If it's a gender quota, some ill-qualified woman will get it against a very talented man who won't get the job. Whereas what we would say is that, firstly, there are really big unconscious bias, or sometimes even conscious bias, that exist in our current workplaces, which means that the way that merit is often even judged isn't fair to women. So we know there's all sorts of research that shows us that people tend to employ like, that you naturally think that somebody who's similar to you is extremely talented and should have the job. Or sometimes even worse than that, it's just simply that certain jobs are so associated with masculinity or so associated with the sorts of things that people associate with men that they just assume men are best at those jobs. And we see that particularly in the STEM disciplines. So when we look at things like engineering and IT, they're such masculine environments already that people sort of automatically assume that it's men that are best at those jobs.
Yeah, and that's a question that is raised along with this topic almost every time, that jobs should be given based on merit and not gender. So if I'm an employer and I have a more qualified, more talented, motivated male individual, why should I be restrained and forced to hire the female in a situation where male candidates are truly better for the job? In what way should gender quota then be presented to people that are feeling hesitant about this particular case or a situation?
What we've found is in a lot of cases when people are actually made to look genuinely at the women candidates with open eyes, they will find that the women candidates are in fact just as good as the male candidates, or perhaps the reason why they might not be as advanced in their career are due to factors that are more about their gender than about their ability. So first we would actually say, check yourself, make sure that you're not just making assumptions that the male candidate is a better candidate, because a lot of the times people are. But if there are circumstances where he is far and away the better candidate, quotas and targets are not about never allowing any man to get a job. You know, there will still be opportunities. That fellow, that man, the better candidate, will still be able to get that job. What we're really saying is that organisations need to look at their systemic issues, their structural issues. Make sure that across the organisation there are equal opportunities for women, for men and for people from different backgrounds. It doesn't mean that you have to employ a woman into every single job you have going, but it does mean that you need to look across your organisation and actually make sure that you are fairly employing people from diverse backgrounds and not just fitting into a certain mindset that you've always followed.
You mentioned their systemic change, and before you also touched on politicians being politicians and community leaders setting examples for the public. Unfortunately, across the world, it's hard for the public to sort of increasingly see a good example. And I feel that increasingly all issues are left with normal people to resolve first. In the instance of climate action, it's on the consumer to not buy and not support certain brands. Same thing goes with ethical fashion, equality across the world. And when it comes to gender, it's sort of expected that employers and organisations, current students, parents, raise children and treat employees without stereotyping. But a lot of times these issues stem from government policy and policy in countries that organisations themselves sort of are looking for, they're looking for profit and looking for an employer that's going to help their business. So in the case of male and female workers, things like maternal leave and the fact that, you know, a woman will take time off work, whereas men don't have the same paternal, you know, leave and sort of rights in that aspect. And in Australia, we've only had one female Prime Minister. Currently, both major parties are headed by men, and I think only two parties are headed by women, and those are Pauline Hanson's One Nation and the Jackie Lambie Network. So is this a situation where a top-down approach is really necessary? What will the Australian government do to change the situation, and sort of how can you leave such a big responsibility on individuals and even organisations that aren't in positions of power to change legislation?
I can talk about, I suppose, my own experience in politics. looking at the way the Labor Party introduced gender quotas. And the reason why I think when you ask, you know, do you need a top-down approach, you know, do you actually need to sort of almost be like a cannon blasting through rather than taking a piecemeal approach, is that I think sometimes you do. And if you look at the Labor Party introduced gender targets or gender quotas in 1994, right? It started at 30%. Labor Party now in federal parliament are at 50%, right? 50% women. This is a very good result compared to the Conservative Party, which is massively smaller than that. I think their representation in the lower house is as low as 21%, right? Okay, so Labor is now at 50% in the federal parliament. But it took 25 years to achieve that, right? And this was by setting firm quotas where if a state didn't elect enough women candidates in winnable positions, they would actually have the entire slate returned to them, and they were told by the National Executive, you need to have enough women candidates in winnable positions before we'll actually allow you to present people to the election, right? So it was really tough. It still took the Labor Party 25 years to get to 50%. Why was that? Because it's difficult, right? Because particularly in areas where there's a lot of power or a lot of longevity, like in politics, where people may end up sitting in seats for 25 or 30 years, you need to plan. You need to actually say, it is going to take us a long time to redraw the structural imbalance, which centuries have delivered us with, so we need to plan. And I think the saddest thing about Australian politics is, so the Labor Party are now at 50% after 25 years of employing quotas, but the Liberal Party still haven't done anything about in terms of quotas or targets. And even if they were to implement one today, right, even if Scott Morrison was going to come out and say, okay, we're going to do it too, it would probably take them 25 years. So I suppose what I'm saying is even when you do have really strong, tough targets and you make people act, it still can take a long time. And that's why action is needed. It's why people have to actually take those tough decisions and start making these decisions now, because it's still going to take you a long time to get to gender parity.
You touched a bit on what your experience in politics has been, but what has been, and you're in a leadership role now at the University of Technology as well, what has being in a leadership role taught you? What are some experiences that you've had?
It's taught me that, you know, well, I mean, politics and being in a university is very different. The culture of politics is still a pretty masculine culture, so even with 50% women in the Labor Party now, it's still a pretty masculine culture, and the way power is played out is still pretty rough and tumble, right? And similarly, when you're in workplaces where there are more men than women, you can sometimes have those sorts of, that sort of culture, right? But all businesses have or organisations have different cultures. And one of the things I think that I've learnt in particularly being in a management position is that you need to create the culture in your workplace that is the right one to actually allow all of the talents of all of your people to flourish, the one that makes sure that you're including everyone with all their talents, and that means the sort of environment where it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're, you know, what background you come from, what race you are, what ethnicity you are actually treated equally, and everybody has an equal opportunity to have their talents shine in a workplace. And I think the best workplaces really understand about the value of workplace culture in terms of driving good performance.
Change is difficult, and even when you start with smaller problems, tackling gender stereotyping is a whole other ballpark because it does vary so much culture to culture. Mm-hmm. And Australia being a multicultural country and a real melting pot of different values, social expectations, will it truly ever be possible for us here to reach a point where people feel free to work, live and behave in a way that suits them best rather than in a way that's perceived right according to the gender that they were assigned at birth?
I hope so. I think things will hopefully, touch wood, get better. I think there's a lot of people who are really committed to a more inclusive society, a less judgmental society, a society that aims to include everyone and all their talents and give everybody an equal go. But it's always a bit of a struggle, you know. People have to recognise that centuries of inequality cannot just be changed overnight, and that part of it all is actually working out how it is that you can change structures. And one of the reasons why we're having this panel tonight, one of the reasons why we're having a symposium today at UTS, is explicitly about discussing how can we make sure that we as universities establish the sort of structures and programs and policies which mean that women, particularly in the STEM disciplines, so in science, technology, engineering, maths, are given an equal go, and that we're going to be positively engaged in that as something worthwhile. There's a big labour shortage. There's a skills gap in Australia around the engineering, IT and technology professions. And one of the reasons for that skills gap is that we know we're not tapping enough into the talent of our women. So it really is about not just about benefiting the women, but benefiting the country by making sure everyone gets access to an opportunity in these professions.
Yes, it would be good to see 50% of the population represented in workplace as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important.
Thank you, Verity, for your expertise and time this afternoon. Once again, looking forward to hearing the panel discussion later tonight.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Want to hear more stories like this? Subscribe to our regular podcasts on iTunes.